The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, I'm excited because if you compare Joe Biden's presidency to Donald Trump's presidency, you have a clear contrast. While millions of jobs were lost under Donald Trump, you've had Joe Biden be the best job producing president we've had. Joe Biden inherited this crisis where Donald Trump was telling us to inject ourselves with bleach. Biden got us through that crisis, and now after the whole world really suffering from a tough economy, our economy is showing signs of strength that are the envy of the world around. We see manufacturing coming back in our economy. We see investments in everything from infrastructure all the way from the environment, historic investments. And I just sat with some business leaders in the tech sector and saying that CHIPS and Science Act that we did is going to pay dividends for generations to come. He's got a story to tell. And even on the toughest issues, the Republicans have shown that they're about chaos and conflict and not about solving problems. And this is a tough time to lead. But President Biden on the world stage right now has stepped up in ways that have earned him the respect of our allies and peers all across the globe.
We always talk about trend lines. And the trend lines are all breaking Joe Biden's way. I mean, if you look at the top of Drudge, if you're Trump, you probably would jump off the Brooklyn Bridge. I mean, because he's like MAGA meltdown and talks about all the polls breaking in Joe Biden's way. But they are. I mean, the trend lines are pretty strong for Biden coming out of still coming out of the State of the Union.
But really, the more Donald Trump is out there, the more he's railing, the more he's in a courtroom, the more you saw it in this number about the hush money trial, which is also an election interference trial, the more the public sees of Donald Trump, the Biden campaign hopes, the less it wants to see him back in the White House.
Yeah, and something in that poll just is something that I just want to reiterate for people out there who say to me, you know, this hush money thing, it's good for Donald Trump. It makes him look like the victim. No, seeing him sit in a courtroom every day and seeing him every day in the news and hearing is not helping him. I could never understand that logic, how somebody who is under indictment for a felony charge and is about to face trial, somehow that's good for them. So it's not, and the numbers show that. And if you look at, and by the way, in this trial, he will be convicted. I don't think there's any question about it.
Well, Americans have a tendency to romanticize the recent past. And so I think now that they're seeing more of Donald Trump, and in this case from the Biden campaign, mm-hmm. they're remembering just how awful that presidency was.
Artificial intelligence. It's the latest craze, right? This is what artificial intelligence looks like. They're fresh, hot new take that Joe Biden is crushing it. Yeah, he got 81 million votes in 2020. I guess this time around, what will it be? He's so popular. His policies, so popular. He could get maybe 100 million votes. We'll see. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's exciting show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. Now, if you were actually observing what was happening yesterday, I forget where he was off to, but it was Donald Trump in Atlanta. He stopped into a Chick-fil-A. All of the workers there were black. They were beaming. They were taking selfies. They were taking pictures. One woman comes up to him and says, I don't care what people say. You know, we love Trump. I mean, that's real. That's authentic, right? On the other hand, I mean, the one true statement you heard in that cold open is there is a clear contrast. That's for sure. But it's breaking in the direction away from the regime media artificial intelligence. That's right. I mean, all the left-wing radicals are the ones creating AI. So, I mean, it's like these talking heads. They spring right out of that technology. They say the same things over and again. Everything's break. The trend lines are breaking Joe Biden's way. Okay, got it, Joe. We got it. No, that's not what's happening. Listen to this. This is some on the, I believe, the visit that Trump had at Chick-fil-A and a few other things in this next montage, clip 7.
What, in your view, constitutes the primary threat to freedom and democracy at home?
Donald Trump. Seriously. Donald Trump uses phrases like, he's going to eviscerate the Constitution. He's going to be a dictator on day one. I can't think of any other time in my lifetime, in history that's occurred, that you've had somebody who's had this kind of attitude.
The Chick-fil-A event. This was an event to behold. Now, everything you've heard about Donald Trump in the press is that he's like this dangerous racist. He waltzes in there, orders food, and about a dozen African-American women flock to him and take selfies. African-American women, the most loyal voting bloc of the Democratic Party. He has them giggling. He has them lining up. He says, "Mom, I'm famous now." It's all love in the Chick-fil-A.
But not only did it go good dealing with the people behind the camera, I could see the raw feed. When he went up to Michaela Montgomery, he had another extemporaneous conversation. Listen to this exchange that even USA Today had to write up as a positive.
So I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. We support you.
We love you.
Okay, 4 p.m. We've been 4 p.m.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
Please do.
Just to put it in perspective, Atlanta is the modern day Black Wall Street, where all Black businesses flourish. This is a highly, probably about 70%, 60-70% of Black folks that are there. So if you're a Democrat, you're worried about moments like this. And this just takes me before Donald Trump decided to declare his presidency. He was known as the hip hop guy, the person that was cited in all the lyrics because he was a money guy. This is why he relates with people.
So while all of that was going on, as Lawrence was talking about before, President Biden had a state dinner honoring the Japanese prime minister, and it was a star-studded event. It you have was. Bill and Hillary Clinton there, Robert De Niro, Jeff Bezos, and his wife, Tim Cook.
Okay. Third, next question. Who do I call on next? Hang on a second. I got my list here. Hang on. I apologize.
Well, it just wasn't that moment. It was when they were both the prime minister and Joe Biden had to give a statement. And you got the Japanese prime minister that is no notes or anything, mm-hmm. just going,
in
obviously in a foreign country,
right?
Okay, and is able to do it. And you got the current commander-in-chief that has to read off a little note. And it just shows you the contrast between one country's strong leader and our president who can't remember.
Yeah, and there was this one.
The trend lines. That's what we're talking about today, right? The trend lines breaking in the direction of Joe Biden, the fake president. He can't veer off the script. He's got to go according to whatever his staff says. You ask this or you give a question to this individual. That's what he goes with. But listen, listen now. It's star-studded. I mean, he's got celebrities there. Now, Trump has everyone at Chick-fil-A wanting to hug him and tell their mama about how they're famous now. But he's got, the fake president's got Robert De Niro. So how does this break? As far as trend lines go, how do you suppose that this is going to break? And yet they still come out with the same tired old narratives. Yeah, I think Joe Biden's crushing it. Listen to John Bolton's mustache as he's on, I think it's MSNBC, as he's explaining. This is a very thought-provoking exchange. He's explaining who he will vote for this time around. Clip 8.
And you've said you're going to write someone in November.
That's what I did in 2020, and I'll do it again this November.
Who did you write in 2020? You've never revealed that before.
Well, I might as well say it now. I voted for Dick Cheney.
Wow.
And I'll vote for Dick Cheney again this November.
You'll write in Dick Cheney.
That's right.
That's right. What? Well, why Dick Cheney? Why not William Howard Taft, maybe? Why not, I don't know, Dick Cheney? Is he still around? This is good commentary, I guess. CNN.
This is CNN.
This is the same guy, by the way, John Bolton, who bragged. This was with Jake Tapper not that long ago. He was bragging about organizing coup d'etats. That's right. Clip 9.
One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat, not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work.
It takes a lot of work to plan a coup. And he's done it. He has experience. He's an experienced coup d'etat. How about that? He's experienced at planning coups. And, I mean, you've got to be brilliant. You have got to be brilliant. This is, you cannot make this up. Abraham Lincoln, some of his advisors asked him, right in the midst of the Civil War, why do you tell all these stories so much? Why do you tell so many jokes? And he said, if I couldn't tell these stories, I'd die. I'd die. I think he said elsewhere, I laugh because I must not cry. I mean, it's to see your country dying. To see the lying nonstop. You talk about artificial intelligence. It is all around us. Forget about the technology online. What we're seeing is complete and total fakery. Buffoonery. It's just off the charts, these people. No truth. There's no truth in them, said Jesus Christ. You are of your father, the devil. He was a liar and a murderer from the beginning. Just go into John Bolton's exchange on CNN. A little bit further, clip 5.
I think it's important to understand, and I think this is especially important for Trump critics to understand, he doesn't have a philosophy. He doesn't think in policy terms as that's conventionally understood in Washington. He thinks in anecdotal, ad hoc, transactional terms, seen through the prism of how does this benefit Donald Trump. So trying to get from A to B with Trump is no easy task. And since it's constantly refiltered through the notion of where he will benefit from it, it's very hard to know where he will go. He has simple-minded ideas about how the world works. Donald Trump doesn't have a clue.
So let's get this straight. So the guy that's voting for Dick Cheney and is proud of planning coup d'etats, not here, but, you know, all over the world. He says Trump is an idiot. Got it. He says Trump is an idiot. Who is the idiot? Seriously. Donald Trump has exposed these frauds. He's exposed so much of the fakery. He's exposed the artificial intelligence. PJ Media. Pathetic Bush Republicans don't grasp that they're vestigial and won't be making a comeback. They're a thing of the past. That's what the new word means. They're voting for Dick Cheney. We've got to do it. We've got to hold on to the old guard. Seriously, I mean, I've joked before about voting for John Bolton's mustache. I bet John Bolton's mustache pulls in more votes than Dick Cheney in the upcoming presidential election. It says here, the members, well, this is from that PJ Media piece, they also have connections to the same two prominent Republicans, talking about all these rhinos. The opinion section of the New York Times is determined to make disaffected, Trump-loathing Republicans feel as if they still have relevance for the future of the party because of Trump's brand, because the Times brand is Trump bashing. Frequent opportunities are given to the wandering squishes to pen op-eds that lament the current state of the GOP and whine about orange man bad. It says, almost without fail, the people the Times finds for this have deep ties to either George H.W. or George W. Bush. We should have queued up the Busby soundbite. One of my favorites. One of Sam's favorites is the one you just heard from John Bolton. Yeah, it takes, I mean, you got to be brilliant to plan a coup d'etat. One of my favorites is Busby saying during the Ken Paxton impeachment hearing, the Bush era is over in Texas. They're a thing of the past. What's the word? I'm probably not even pronouncing it right. Vestigial. They're like an old antique gathering dust. And Trump has exposed them all. It says the members of the Bush political bloodline held sway in the Republican Party for so long that they became cloaked in entitlement. They felt that they should be allowed to keep the party wallowing in mediocrity forever. If they'd have their way, we would be dealing with Hillary Clinton's second term as president. Look at the damage that Biden has done in just 3 years. That would have mattered, not to them. They'd still be getting quality cigar and cognac time in the at the Capitol Hill Club, listening to Fiddler whilst Washington burned. Yeah, just got to be a part of the club. As long as we'll put forward Romney, we'll put forward McCain, we'll put forward another Bushy, and then we'll lose. We'll lose with dignity. That's right. And we'll just let the communist left destroy the country. But hey, we can still go to the cocktail parties. Yeah. We can still meet up with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and, oh, the dear leader, Barack Hussein Obama. We swoon before him. But with respect to Donald Trump, never mind what happens at Chick-fil-A. Never mind that. He is Hitler. I don't know why the African Americans at Chick-fil-A wanted to take pictures with him, but listen, he's Hitler. And I am taking such a strong position against Hitler that I'm going to vote for Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney. It's unbelievable. Trump derangement syndrome is real. It's real. Listen to more from Nicole Wallace yesterday, clip two.
When the history of our turbulent current times, that the ones we're living through, are written, it will be noted that the loudest warnings about the danger to our nation and our democracy, if the disgraced, twice impeached, four times indicted ex-president should be elected to a second term, the most urgent warnings, by and large, with a few exceptions, came from women and young women in most instances. Women who worked in the Trump administration, like Cassidy Hutchinson, Sarah Matthews, who you saw there, Alyssa Farah Griffin, and women from other branches of government, people like Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney has made it her life's work to see Donald Trump held accountable politically and legally. The women speaking clearly without flinching, often at great personal risk to their safety, to their careers. Liz Cheney isn't in Congress anymore. In order to, in their view, in their telling, warn people and put their fellow citizens on notice about what they witnessed the first time Trump was president, and to warn us about what could be in store next time.
The women have spoken. I am terrified. The women have decided. Orange man bad. That's right. Never mind Joe Biden. Bill Clinton, none of them. Forget that. Forget Joe Scarborough. There's some skeletons in all of those closets. But forget all of that. It's Donald Trump. He hates women. And the women hate him. Listen to clip three.
And with women leading the way and with the stakes so high, the chorus now, veritable chorus of former Trump officials putting the nation on blast about the dangers of a potential second Trump term has grown to include chiefs of staff, national security advisors, even Trump's own vice president, Mike Pence.
Wow, everybody's aligned against him. The trend lines are definitely going in Joe Biden's favor. And listen, there's a chorus of women. Listen to clip four.
The chorus now, veritable chorus.
It's a veritable chorus. That word veritable, in case you didn't know. Being, in fact, the thing named and not false, unreal, or imaginary, often used to stress the aptness of a metaphor. That's brought to you by, brought to you courtesy of Webster's Dictionary. It's not just a chorus. It's a veritable chorus of women. Trump's going down. Trump, the trend lines, they're pointing in the direction of Joseph Robinette Biden. Meanwhile, the country, in case you're concerned, the country goes up in flames. This is from Hugh Hewitt. Says, we're in a war. Biden doesn't know it. Trump does. Says, is the United States at war this April? Was it at war in November 1941? Of course, we are, just as we were on the eve of Pearl Harbor. Just as then, many Americans, including the president, were unaware of it. Talks about a recent drone strike against American soldiers brought on by, ordered by Iran, the mullahs, you know, the ones we're trying to appease, you know, the ones behind the October 7 attack, the ones telling Hamas, hold steady, hold firm. We've got the international community on our side. Everybody's ganging up against Israel. It's unbelievable. 6 months. And they're pointing at Israel as the bad guy. Says here, we are in an undeclared war with Iran, as is Israel. Though by the time this column appears, Iran may have abandoned its cloak of cowardice and struck directly at Israel from Iranian soil and brought the barely hidden war out into the open. The United States is at war with a three-tiered partnership of evil actors. Goes on and talks about China and Russia, Cuba, obviously Iran. It says here, this is a war administration in the making, though its central purpose would be to avoid the formal outbreak of war via the robust display of confidence and strength. It says, weakness is provocative, and no administration has been as weak and thus as provocative as Joe Biden's weakness. To hear the fake president the other day, I think I played the clip yesterday, talk about how he's outraged that these aid workers in Gaza, you know, traveling through Gaza at midnight, carting around terrorists with them as they're supposedly delivering aid. And the fake president here in the U.S., he's outraged that Israel would just bomb this convoy and kill aid workers. It's exactly what Joe Biden's administration did as they were pulling out of Afghanistan. Killed a family of 10 innocents. And you know what? Wasn't it General Milley who called it a righteous strike? They killed innocents and bragged about it. Said it was righteous. What about before that? Or I don't remember the timing specifically. But here come these suicide bombers that take out 13 U.S. soldiers, as well as a couple hundred Afghans. Pretty amazing what we're witnessing. America being humiliated, America sustaining one defeat after another, America going up in America being invaded at the border, the southern border, runaway inflation, as I covered yesterday, everything's 30-40% higher than it was just three years ago. And yet you listen to the cold opens on this show, listen to the montages that we put together. Listen to John Bolton. Really sad to see this kind of sickness. I mentioned the invasion at the border. Listen to this from Laura Ingraham last night, clip 6.
Now, from the beginning, whenever the Biden folks were pressed about the border, they immediately started lying and, of course, blame shifting. Now, first, you remember, it wasn't a crisis at all, said our border czarina. Well, thank you, Kamala. Then it was all President Trump's fault for not agreeing to support what was in the end a bogus immigration bill that would have kept the flow coming. Now, all along, they were lying. They were so desperate to flood the country with undocumented Democrats and cheap workers for their donors that the White House completely misread the electorate. Now, with our own eyes, we Americans have seen the damage that the Biden border policy has done to our communities. Yet the administration and its minions claimed consistently that the president did not have the power to stop it. In the 2020 campaign, don't forget that President Trump warned voters that Biden would open the floodgates, and after all, he was all but promising he would do that.
We don't need a wall. I would end this notion for the first time in history that people seeking asylum have to be in squalor on the other side of the river, and no one would be put in jail while waiting for their hearing.
Should undocumented immigrants arrested by local police be turned over to immigration officials?
No.
Their plan all along was to speed up, not slow down, the mass importation of foreigners into the United States.
This was the plan all along, as she points out. I mean, you see more and more of the commentators, don't you? Coming around to see that, hey, Trump warned us of this. Trump said this is what's going to happen. And by the way, here's what Joe Biden said himself. It's all part of the fundamental transformation of the United States. America under attack. If you don't have the book, this has been in circulation since 2013. 11 years. Way ahead of its time. Tomorrow's news today, as we so often say for our Trumpet magazine, when you call the 800 number to get your book, your free book, no cost, no obligation, sign up for a free one-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine as well. Yesterday I mentioned this article. I didn't have time to get into it. It's from the National Interest. And it really does highlight, again, what Mr. Armstrong covers in this book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, a prophecy in Luke 26 and verse 19 in particular, where it says that God would break the pride of our power. You look at so much, it was brought out in that previous article I quoted from, so much weakness that we're projecting to Iran, to China, to Putin and Russia. The National Interest piece says here, on an unusually warm October day in 1937, President Roosevelt took center stage to dedicate the new Outer Drive bridge in Chicago. As he spoke, Benito Mussolini's Italy was consolidating its conquest of Ethiopia. Nazi Germany was drafting its plans for continental domination, and Imperial Japanese troops were marching through Beijing. It says Roosevelt announced that it seems to be unfortunately true that the epidemic of world lawlessness is spreading. And when an epidemic of physical disease starts to spread, the community approves and joins in a quarantine of the patients. Further on, it says, despite Roosevelt's call to quarantine the aggressive countries, the United States failed to take decisive action. Yeah, we were isolationist. I mean, that still is a thinking that a lot of people have to this day, including a lot of MAGA supporters. And as I've said to our producers time and again, it's hard not to sympathize with that thinking, because you look at the dumpster fires at home, you look at the border invasion, you look at the inflation, you look at all of you look at the $2 trillion deficit every year. But just to draw on some of these lessons of history, fairly recent history, it says, writing in 1937, Walter Lippmann observed, the fascist powers, though potentially weaker than the rest of us, are in fact stronger because they have the will to fight for what they want, and we do not have it. We just don't have the will to fight, unless it's to fight MAGA. Unless, if it's the communists who are in control, If they're going after MAGA, if they're going after Trump, well, try to destroy them for sure. They're the political opposition, and we want to be in life. We want to be in power for life. But as far as the enemies abroad, as far as Iran, Hamas, Russia, China, soon there's going to be an enemy to emerge out of the heart of Europe. Don't confront that. Just appease them. The widening willpower gap, that's the name of this article. He says, what makes a country powerful? In the white paper after white paper, policymakers warn of the threats revisionist powers pose. In Congress, many elected officials will talk tough on China, Russia, and Iran, yet fail to enact tough policies. Well, it's easy to talk tough. I just saw a clip where Swalwell, he talked about how that Trump is compromised. That's especially rich coming from Eric Swalwell, who literally was in bed with the enemy. That's right. It's easy, isn't it, to talk tough? It's easy to project some kind of artificial intelligence. Yeah, I mean, this is the, I mean, this is, it's not even just a chorus. It's a veritable chorus. I mean, it's absolutely factual. I was telling my wife earlier today, you know, you look at 1 Corinthians 5, where it says, let us keep the feast of unleavened bread. Of course, because it says, let us keep it, people don't. They don't. They just reject the truth of God. New Testament, okay. But look, we can erase that particular verse. We don't want to actually observe these days that God says to observe. It says, let us keep the feast with sincerity and truth. You need both. But how spot on. I mean, that was written 2,000 years ago. And you know what? The Apostle Paul, he got it from the book of Deuteronomy, which was thousands of years before that. How could God have known that there would be so much insincerity, that there would be so much fakery, so much phoniness? God knows. You remember when the iPhone came out 20-ish years ago? People were looking at it and just practically worshiping it. Yeah. Oh, look at what you can pull up. It's like you're carrying around the library in your back pocket. And now we're a generation on. I mean, the technology has its place. I don't know if I would be able to prepare this program in 2 or 3 hours every morning without a laptop, you know, without a Twitter feed and just without my news gatherers that are helping me. We do make use of the technology. But when people were worshiping it, when it first emerged, you had to know something bad's going down with this. I mean, this, okay, yeah, you can do a Google search on a subject and maybe you'll get to the truth. But as we now know, you've got to weed through a lot of error, a lot of lies and deception. And here we are. Here we are in 2024, and now the new craze is artificial intelligence. Yeah, you just punch it in. You put it in the subject. It gives you everything that you need to know about the War of 1812. How can that be a bad thing? Well, you watch. You're already seeing it used. My father had an article. I'll just point you to it because I won't have time to get to it. Maybe on a later show. The Unknown Future of Artificial Intelligence. That was in the March issue of the Trumpet magazine just a little while ago. He said, the greatest danger of AI is the spirit behind the men controlling it. The spirit behind the men controlling it. You think they're going to use it for righteous purposes? Suppose there is one or two good things that come from it. What do you think we're going to be saying about it in not even 20 years? What about 2 years? What about 5 years from now? just given what human nature just continually does. Human nature is the same as it's always been. Herbert Armstrong makes this point in chapter 12 of The Missing Dimension in Sex, another book you should order, free of charge, no cost, no obligation. Human nature is the same, but the technologies that are advancing, I mean, it's just like the Tower of Babel times. The pace with which we can distribute evil, there's never been anything like it. And where does it end? How does this end? Well, coming back to this article, what is it that makes a country powerful? It's easy, it's so easy, as it brings out, to just talk about, to talk the tough talk. Yeah, that's right. This is intelligence. Is it? Or is it artificial? Is it fake? Washington's determination to meet the challenge is wanting. Policymakers are too hesitant to take bold, decisive action, resulting in months of delayed decisions. You see, this is one reason why they hate Donald Trump so much, because whether you like him or not, he does take bold, decisive action. He's a man of action. He's real. He's authentic. That's why you can walk into Chick-fil-A, even in Atlanta, and people are in awe. Ordinary people, I mean, because they know he's real. For all of his flaws, for all of his blemishes, they know he's real, quite unlike the others in the swamp. It says, while the United States and its partners largely recognize the dangerous time we live in, budget priorities indicate that they do not take the threat seriously enough. By and large, the revisionist powers are relatively weak. They lack the economic, military, and political power of the United States and its partners. Due to their weakness, just like in 1937, they share an abundance of willpower. Policymakers must recognize willpower as a strategic resource and not rely solely on traditional forms of net assessment. Failing to take the initiative comes with an unacceptably high cost, and the consequences could be tragic. It comes with a high cost. Appeasing the enemy. Look at the enemies encircling the United States. They may not have all of the power, the military and economic might that the U.S. has at the moment, but they've got willpower. They are willing to use the power they have. This is from the United States and Britain in Prophecy, as I say. If you don't have this book, this is like your Bible prophecy foundation right here. Identifies all the major nations in prophecy so that you can know, where does the United States fit in? Where does Great Britain fit in? Well, it's all here. It's all in your Bible. Mr. Armstrong writes, between them, the British and the American peoples had acquired more than two-thirds, almost three-fourths, of all the cultivated physical resources and wealth of the world. All other nations combined possessed barely more than a fourth. Britannia ruled the waves. And the world's commerce was carried on by water. The sun never set on British possessions. How did this happen? How did the British Empire become so powerful? And added to that, where is it today? Where is that power? Why did it just evaporate away almost overnight? It says, could the British and American peoples be ignored in prophecies of world conditions that fill a third of the entire Bible, when some 90% of all those prophecies pertain to national and international world happenings of our time now? Could the greatest empire in human history and the greatest single superpower, the United States, in history, be totally ignored in Bible prophecy? Do you believe that? All these prophecies, the Olivet prophecy, take that as one example, or Revelation 6, the four horsemen. But Jesus's Olivet prophecy, when he talked about the end times, what would happen right before the return of Christ? Did God somehow overlook the fact that there, oh, by the way, there'd be this great empire coming from this little island in the northwest of Europe. And then this superpower in the New World that wouldn't even come on the scene until the 1700s. And they'd come to dominate the world. Did the Bible, does God have nothing to say about that development? God has everything to say about it. And that's what this book is about. The United States and Britain in prophecy. Mr. Armstrong says, indeed it is, and yet precisely as prophesied, listen to this, Britain's sun has now set, and these same prophecies that foretold Britain's greatness revealed far in advance, Britain has already been reduced to a second-rate or third-rate power in the world. That's true. It's nothing against our brothers in Britain. It's just the reality. It's what's happened. How far removed is Britain from where it was coming into World War II when it was led by Winston Churchill? When it saved Western democracies? It says, and what about the United States? Today, America finds herself heir to just about all the international problems and headaches in this post-World War II chaotic, violent world. I think the last version of this was written when? When was it? 1980s? Maybe before that? How did Mr. Armstrong know that the United States would inherit all the international problems and headaches in this post-World War II era? We're just sending billions and billions. We can't give enough to Ukraine. I mean, we want to dial it back for Israel, because Israel is evil. Israel's led by Bibi, and he's kind of like mini Hitler. You got Donald Trump, who's the big Hitler, and then Bibi's the little Hitler. But other than that, I mean, just send border security money all over the world, even third world African nations, so that they can help tighten up their border security. But here at home, no. As you heard from Joe Biden earlier, we want to open the doors. We don't want to arrest any illegals. What is happening here? What is going on? America's under attack. That's what's happening, and it's prophesied. And where does it end? This lack of will. God said, I will break the pride that you once had in your power. It's easy to talk tough. It's easy to sound intelligent. Even if it's artificial, it could sound pretty good. But where are the actions? Keep the feast with sincerity and truth. Keep the feast sincerely from the heart. Be genuine in your Christian living. Live the way of give. That's God's message to us at this time of year. That's his message all through the year. To live with sincerity and truth, to be real, to be true, to be honest, to be faithful. This quote finishes with, and the United States has won her last war. Even little North Vietnam held her at bay. Many other nations sap America's national strength, and he knows it not, as God long ago foretold. This is what's happening. Just stepping back, stepping away from the political wrangling that happens every day in this country, look back, step back, I should say, and look at how America's strength has been sapped. We've got another booklet that goes by this title, He Was Right. He was right. That's Herbert Armstrong there on the cover. He died in 1986. He wrote The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. He wrote Mystery of the Ages. He wrote The Incredible Human Potential. He was a prolific writer and teacher, educator, a faithful minister of God that boldly proclaimed the truth of God, and he did it with sincerity. And he was right. It says, Mr. Armstrong pinned the blame not on the U.S. military, nor even President Kennedy, but on the American people. He wrote in the October 1961 Plain Truth, unless or until the United States as a whole repents and returns to what has become a hollow slogan on its dollars, In God We Trust, it says the United States of America has won its last war. Was he right? I mean, where have we had a success since Vietnam? Where? I mean, look at what's happening in Ukraine. Look at what happened in Israel. Before that, you could go right down the line. Afghanistan, really? We leave after 13 of our soldiers are bombed to death? We unleash a drone strike that kills a family of 10, 7 children? And the leader of our military says it's a righteous strike. That's some artificial intelligence right there. It's artificial. No, it wasn't righteous. Far from it. Far from it. Mr. Armstrong said, I said that when we failed to win in Korea. I say it again. Now that the United States government endorsed this Cuban fiasco, its president gave the go-ahead, and God, the God America has deserted, gave it its most humiliating defeat. What does the Cuban debacle mean? This is Mr. Armstrong writing back about the 1960s, 1970s. It means, he says, Mr. and Mrs. United States, that the handwriting is on your wall. The handwriting's on the wall. It's telling us it's about over. The will is completely broken and crushed. And no man is going to turn that around. God is looking to us individually now and saying, are you going to be repentant? Will you turn around and change your ways and become a sincere Christian? Basing your religion on truth. We've talked recently about just offering up effectual, fervent prayers and making sure that your relationship with God is the most important relationship in the world. Putting Him first. Rise and pray. Rise up and pray. We're living in perilous times, as Paul said in 2 Timothy. Hopefully it sobers us up. Watch and pray always. Watch unto prayer, Peter said. That's 1 Peter 4. Sobering times, indeed. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure, fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America.
Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
A few emails that have come in recent days. If you'd like to email the show, by the way, the address is td@thetrumpet.com. This one very succinctly says, today's Bible study was awesome. There you go. Let's just end on that. How about that? No, we'll give you a few more. We've got, what do we have, 3-4 minutes? Today's Bible study was awesome. We appreciate that encouragement. Another one here says, thank you for the wonderful shows you present every day. I'm especially today filled with so much sadness when listening to the state of the USA and the fall of the leadership. How tragic. But then you end the episode with so much hope, the power and strength of prayer. How wonderful to know with daily prayer and Bible study, obedience to God's law and building godly faith, we need not fear the devil. It says, in 1 hour, your episode had me sad and angry, and to end, you inspired me to ramp up with more fervent prayer. Well, that's great feedback. Again, it's nice to see that we're covering as much as we possibly can in the, as we often say, the fastest hour in broadcasting. Another one here writes, I was laughing so hard when you were wearing those eclipse shades. What a day. What a day that was. That seems like months ago. It was just Monday, wasn't it? The eclipse shades. I need to bring those back out of retirement at some point. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Another one here says something to think about on why younger George Bush is always siding with the left and against Trump. And here's my thought. Younger Bush knows Trump will allow the Kennedy assassination files of the facts to come out and could show that the elder Bush, that would be his father, I guess, was a part of the plot. He used to work for the CIA, I think, and was close to people thought to be involved in the Kennedy assassination. Well, there you go. You got a conspiracy theory first on this program. You're welcome. No, he makes a good point. Who knows? Who knows what both sides of the uniparty are trying to cover up? This one here says, thank you, as always, for the effort that you all make at the Trumpet Daily. Without you and the TD staff, it would be impossible to put all the pieces together and understand the coming train wreck without making it a full-time job. It says, having a deeper insight into how the system in America was meant to work helps me gain a deeper understanding of America Under Attack and the United States and Britain in Prophecy, two books that we have plugged on today's show. Thank you that you and your staff for the diligent, or thank you and your staff for the diligent effort. Some of it is truly funny. I get a good chuckle when I see how God is causing the heads of Morning Meltdown, the regime media, and Joe Bama to spin and positioning them for the H-bomb that destroys and exposes their treachery. Truly amazing. It says, I've been paying closer attention to the Bible studies, especially the one from April 5th, and I thought how nice it would be to put them into a transcript. It says it would be nice to be able to reference them in print. Continue the good work in bringing us the fastest hour in broadcasting. Well, that actually is a good place to end. As we come to the end of the fastest hour in broadcasting, you are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.